Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Beverly Gower-Jones. Hi, Beverly.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Very good. Thanks very much. I think we go back quite a while. I knew you were in Kinetic, but also we didn't cross paths when you were in Shell in the early 2000s when we were venturing. But you've been around in this space for a while with us.
I certainly have. Yes. Yeah. Open innovation has been, a topic of kind of great interest and something that I've worked in for a long, long time.
Right. And before we kick off, congratulations on your OBE. You were in the King's Honours list at the beginning of this year. Have you had your presentation and all that yet? And
No. The presentation is actually the 3rd of March. They caught me a bit by surprise last week. I got the date through and I thought I was going to have much longer to get ready for it. But it's early next month.
And what was that honour for? What's the sort of summary that they sort of say when they say, "Oh, you've been tapped by the king"?
Yes, for services to net zero innovation. So it's something that I've been working on for the last 20 years. I founded Carbon Limiting Technologies back in 2006, specifically to help low carbon entrepreneurs commercialise their technologies and their innovations. And to try and work with corporates to encourage them to look at sustainability and net zero technologies as a key to future proofing their businesses.
Excellent, great. Well, that's a great kickoff as sort of an introduction and that as well. And your key thing now is the Clean Growth Fund. Maybe we can get a bit of an understanding. What's the purpose and objective of that, and how it's operating, please?
Sure. So. Yeah, I could tell, when I was working with all these entrepreneurs over the years, one of the things that kind of hit me again and again is that they really struggle to get the funding that they need to build those first of a kind demonstrators. A large number of low carbon technologies have a hardware component, and so you tend to need that kind of £3 to £5 million to build the commercial demonstrator so that it can be proven that it actually does what it says on the tin. And having looked around and noticing that the general venture capital firms were not moving into the clean tech space, I put a vision together for an early stage VC fund and then started to raise the money for it. Had first close in May 2020, it was £40 million. And then over the next 18 or so months, I raised the extra 61, so that the fund is now 101 million. It invests in seed and Series A companies. Mm-hmm. Initial check size is a kind of £0.5 to £3 million. That's our sweet spot. And we look at, for technologies that are and companies that are based in the UK, who are at the kind of TRL 6 and upwards kind of level.
Excellent. And how are you finding the market and all that during COVID and all that? Because if you raised your first 40 million in May 2020, that must have been a bit interesting, was it, as we went into March and then you managed to close?
It was the biggest shock, if you like, having spent the best part of 10 years trying to raise this fund, for COVID to then hit at the 11th hour in March was a bit of a challenge. But we'd gone quite through the due diligence process with our cornerstone investors. And I think at that point, everybody wanted to, complete and close. So we were able to work on Teams and Zoom and everything to get the fund closed. The kind of bigger challenge really was raising the rest of the money, because right. Normally meet the people face to face that you're going to, invest in, to make sure that, the LP investors, to make sure that we're someone that they really wanted to be confident of. And actually, one or two of them invested in us having not met at all. And that was the first time that they'd ever, done something like that. So I think it's a number of firsts always round, really.
Yeah. And how are you finding the investment environment and that now as we're sort of coming out of the COVID? I'm actually sort of finding it's like worse than when we went in. We were expecting it to be dire and off the cliff, and then it sort of seemed to steam ahead. Whereas, you know, I was interviewing and did these podcasts and I'm back with Unilever and other venture sort of funds in the early 2020, in the first into COVID, and we were thinking it was going to be terrible. But now I think the prospects are not looking as good. What's your view of the market at the moment?
I think we had the cop pop, the surge at the end of
2021,
right, where there was a lot more money went into early stage venture. What we're seeing now in 2022 is a general fall off in venture money across the board, not just in clean tech. Yeah. I think actually for clean tech, things have been much more protected because, it's clearly an opportunity. It's clearly the direction of travel, and there might be one or two bumps on the road, but I don't think anyone is in any doubt that they need to decarbonize their products and services, their core businesses, and it's on every agenda in every boardroom. So, yeah. On the whole, I think the VC investing in low carbon is very bright, and I see many more funds being launched and established, many more corporate venturing funds materializing. And I think, on the whole, the trend is up.
Right. Yeah. So great. Could you give us an idea of the process you go through and maybe use a couple of the examples of businesses in your portfolio to talk through, how you meet the ventures, how you do the due diligence on them? And I guess an important aspect, not only from the finance and the business model sort of aspect, but how do you do the clean tech and the carbon impact sort of assessment? If you give a couple of examples, that would be fantastic.
Sure. So if I take the first investment that we ever invested in, it was a company called Piclo. So Piclo does flexibility trading. So it has a software platform and it helps demand and supply side trade flexibility. So when the supply side can't meet the demand, it can ask to have that turned down or turned off. And for that, there's a transaction, there's a fee that's payable. So I first knew Piclo back when they were receiving grant funding. They were one of the Energy Entrepreneurs Fund companies, and Carbon Limiting Technologies, which is the consulting firm that I founded back in 2006, was providing support, acceleration and incubation support for them on their journey. So I had a really good knowledge and understanding of as to how efficient they were with the resources they had and how they met their milestones and their targets on time. And so when I got the fund established, they were one of the early companies that were looking for investment at the time. So I already had a good knowledge of the people, which is obviously critical, when you're investing. In terms of the climate assessment, carbon limiting, the Clean Growth Fund has its own assessment, which was built off some work that Carbon Limiting Technologies had done prior. And essentially what we do is we look at how much carbon one unit or could save or could potentially reduce. And we look at what the cost per ton of that would be, because, of course, it needs to be affordable. And we then look over 5 years and 10 years, if the company meets its sales projections, its revenue targets, what the potential carbon saving could be. Mm-hmm. And then based on that data and information, we ask for, we look for other things as well, like noise and footprint and so on. But we've chosen greenhouse gas emissions as the kind of primary indicator, something I call return on carbon. Use that as a key, kind of input into our decision-making process. Now, with something like Piclo, that's slightly more difficult because, of course, a trading, flexibility platform is an indirect benefit. But the what the software does is it enables the supply side, not to have to turn on that coal fired peaker plant when times are at peak, and so we can make accurate estimates as to how much that would be. And also they're enabling a faster transition to electric heating and electric vehicles, right? Because, you know, because they're able to balance out the load. So based on that, we produced a, you know, well, the company produced a model, which we were then able to evaluate in the decision making process. So that's kind of the Piccolo story.
Yep.
In terms of the other story, I think another company that is a later investment is a carbon capture company.
Yeah.
And they're based in Northern Ireland. They've just changed their name from MoffTech to Nuada. And they have a very interesting metal organic framework process for capturing carbon dioxide from flue gas streams. They're focusing on the cement industry first. They have a trial customer in Italy that they're working with. And, you know, again, how did we meet them? Well, Carbon Limiting Technologies did a landscape map because we were looking for carbon capture companies, and we evaluated all the different, you know, folk in the carbon capture space in the UK, went to see them. And selected Nuada as one which we felt had real potential to keep the cost of carbon capture really low. The methods that they have for manufacturing them off is very novel and has the potential to really reduce the, you know, that cost of carbon capture, which is critical. So. Again, it was a very similar process, right, in terms of how much, you know, carbon greenhouse gas emission can they potentially reduce with one unit? What's the cost per ton of that? And then over time, what does the sales forecast look like?
Yeah. Because as you said, in both those examples, it's not a straightforward, like almost on the financial bit about there's the revenues, there's a margin, there's a profit figure. There's ecosystem issues in that here with the Piccolo sort of type one. There's not a direct sort of benefit in that there. And I guess in your second example, the thing I often try and get my head round is that, yes, while you maybe capture the carbon, who's actually going to pay for that cost of the carbon capture? And, you know, and is the regulation going to force it, or are government's going to bottle out on their regulation in the end because it just becomes too costly, or politically it's not relevant at the time? There's quite a bit more play going on here, isn't it, within all this future thinking?
Yeah, for both examples, one is in a regulated market, and distribution system operators and transmission system operators have to operate within the kind of regulatory rules. And so the uptake of something as important as a flexibility platform, you know, it can be a slower process. However, you know, Piccolo now have one. They are the first digital platform to be used in National Grid's control room because they've just got that contract. And they've also been very successful in Italy with Enel, who are the largest distribution system operator. So the risk we took in terms of them scaling up and being internationalized, I think we're really pleased with their progress. They're also doing a trial in New York, they're really kind of making great strides. So I think, you know, that kind of complex regulatory environment that can put generalist VCs off our deep sector knowledge and understanding to, you know, where the market is and what's needed and so on, enables us to make some of those investments. We also get those climate assessment reports independently validated because they're assumptions based. So yes, we look for a particular expert in the particular sector that the venture's in, and make sure then that somebody, you know, reviews the assessments and the assumptions and you know, writes a report to state that yes, you know, they're reasonable within the piece.
Yeah. And how many have you got in your portfolio at the moment?
We've got 10 companies now in the portfolio.
What's your sort of plans on numbers of investments per year or proportion of follow-ons and sort of stuff like that, just roughly.
So roughly conventional wisdom is about 50-50 for new and for follow-on. And I suppose we'll, you know, maybe do 20-25 investments in the fund overall.
Right.
You know, in the next week, we're kind of, April is our year four year. So we have, you know, another two kind of solid years of new investments before we start to, you know, to focus more on kind of portfolio management and follow-on activity.
Great. Maybe we could take a step back a little moment around the corporates and the fund partners that are in this sort of ecosystem. You and I know Green Angel Syndicate. Been sort of involved in that. I think Piccolo came through Green Angels or had investment from Green Angel Syndicate as well. So if you can give your perspective on maybe this ecosystem that's out there now in terms of early angels that are supporting ventures and then corporates like, you know, Shell Ventures and sort of likes like that where you originally sort of came from. What how are you seeing that landscape at the moment and how do you fit into it?
So I think as I mentioned, that, you know, the landscape is increasing. There are more funds that are, you know, being established both on the corporate venture side, you know, and also the PVC side to look at growth capital, as well as kind of early stage investment in low carbon companies, which I think is great because, you know, the amount of investment that goes into artificial intelligence and biotechnology is something like 10 times the amount that goes into low carbon and clean tech.
Right.
And this is the, you know, biggest existential crisis we've ever faced. Then clearly, you know, it's way underfunded. And so that absolutely needs to shift. It's really pleasing to see corporates coming in to and establishing funds that are focused on clean tech. I think, you know, they do have a strategic perspective. And clearly what's really critical is that, you know, technology companies have the opportunity to demonstrate their technologies with a corporate. You know, that product market fit is absolutely critical for an investor to invest. And the corporate has a real role to play there. In making that happen, so I really welcome, you know, the corporate coming into the space.
I think it's also important there that these startups show the technology and the new business models that these corporates then end up shifting, isn't it? Because literally, we've got to shift the oil tanker, you know, to into sort of clean tech areas, and these corporates are often so focused, whichever industry they're in. You know, whether it's shampoos or oil or energy or transport, they're so focused on their current industry. We've got to cut through that in a more net zero, you know, environmentally sensible way. But it needs us these different technologies and business models to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And for some, you know, I look at a kind of a three-tier process. The first tier is, you know, the obvious things, the light bulbs, the, you know, the insulation and so on. The second tier is efficiency savings. So digital artificial intelligence to help do the current processes more efficiently, because quite often efficiency saving is operating cost saving.
Yeah.
And then the third tier is implementing that new technology, that thing that, you know, really is going to help decarbonize the core business process. There's a huge benefit to be had from that, but, you know, when that is part of the core business and you're not going to be able to sell the yogurts on Monday if it goes wrong, then I can see that, you know, there's a certain amount of risk involved in that, and so that needs planning and that needs, you know, some careful thought and consideration, but, you know, and that's where carbon limiting technologies helps to look at what that roadmap should look like for a company. But it's absolutely clear that that's the direction of travel, and that's the route that all corporates from whatever sector are all going on, that's critical. Some of them are you know, creating consortium and collaborations because they know that it doesn't make sense for them to try and do it on their own, so they're working with others in their, you know, in their sector.
Yeah.
So, all right, how do we help our supply chains decarbonize? Because actually, at the end of the day, we're all using the same companies. And that makes a huge amount of sense.
No, that's great, Beverly. Thanks very much. You've given us a great introduction to yourself and the fund, and getting the couple of examples out of your portfolio is fantastic, and also given us the context for the wider ecosystem. So very much appreciate it, and congratulations again on the OBE, and hope you have a fantastic day. Is it Buckingham Palace you're going to be going to in March?
Yes, that's right. It's Buckingham Palace, yeah.
And is Charles the person, or
you don't find out till the day, I think.
Right.
So it'll be a pleasant surprise, whoever it is.
We'll see whether he's lucky enough to meet you. Beverly, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Please give a 5-star like and subscribe to future podcasts.